WHFR Dearborn, WHFR FM at Henry Ford Community College. This is a special pre-recorded edition of the new WHFR Journal, today featuring the presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party for the office of President of the United States, Michael Bednarik, and he's joining us by telephone today. Mr. Bednarik, how's it going for you today?
It's going very well. Thank you so much.
Okay, we know that you... Great. We know that you have a few other scheduled places to stop today. Today is September 12th, the day that we're recording this, and you're in town to... I know there's a big banquet out in Mount Clemens, sponsored by the Libertarian Party out there, that you're going to be speaking at tonight and some other interviews this afternoon. So thank you at least for your time on the telephone.
My pleasure.
We have with us in the studio Susan Morrell, our WHFR news director. And without further ado, let's get right into the interview. And thank you for an hour of your time, too. We hope to be able to get into a good number of specifics and allow people to become more familiar with not only yourself, but also the Libertarian Party. So, Susan, take it away.
Welcome to WHFR.
Thank you.
And I'd like to ask you, how has your background and experience prepared you for the role of President of the United States?
All of my life, my parents have trained me to assume responsibility. I started babysitting for my brothers as early as 5 years old. I was a Boy Scout for 12 years, a Scoutmaster for 10 years. I've been an advanced first aid instructor, CPR instructor, and also a skydiving instructor, where I literally had the responsibility of people's lives in my hands. And in addition to that, I've studied the Constitution for 20 years. I currently teach an 8-hour class on the U.S. Constitution, where I emphasize the difference between rights and privileges, indicating that we, the people, ordain and establish the government. The government works for us, not the other way around.
What is the philosophy of the Libertarian Party, and why did you decide to run as a Libertarian candidate?
Well, the philosophy of the Libertarian Party is based on individual rights and personal responsibilities. In a sense, everyone is allowed to make their own decisions, and they're required to live by the consequences of those decisions. In other words, in every decision about your life, either you can make that decision, or the government can make the decision for you. And libertarians are overwhelmingly in favor of you making your own life's decisions.
In March of 2001, our economy went into recession. By all accounts, this has been a jobless recovery. Here in Michigan, workers are faced with one of the highest unemployment rates in the nation. What would you do as president to improve these economic conditions?
Well, I think that the government and the government's regulations have caused much of our economic problems. Libertarians believe in the free market, the law of supply and demand, where the consumers decide what the best goods and services are by purchasing or paying for those goods and services. What we have now is a government that is involved in the economy at many, many different levels, subsidizing one industry over another, and basically raising the cost of doing business so high in the United States that companies are forced to move their manufacturing and jobs offshore to countries which don't have excessive regulations. NAFTA and GATT are labeled free trade agreements, but they were actually 22,000 pages of regulations that the Libertarian administration would be very quick to eliminate.
And how would you go about getting people back to work in this? They say the economy's recovering, but still there are not enough jobs out there for the population.
Well, George Bush continues to brag about his $300 tax rebate, basically giving you back, you know, some of your own money. As a libertarian, I want to eliminate the IRS completely. I would not replace it with a sales tax, and that would allow people to keep all of the money that they've worked so hard for. Literally, people would have more money than they knew what to do with, at least for a while, and small businesses would be springing up like dandelions to provide new goods and new services to raise our standard of living, and our economy would not only grow, but it would grow exponentially. People worried about what we would do without the IRS. generally don't realize that the IRS only comprises a small percent of the government's income, which they get from corporate taxes and excise taxes on foreign companies, etc. And so the United States government is basically too large. We need to reduce the size of the federal government and push all of that money back into the hands of American consumers, and that will rapidly improve our economy.
If you eliminated the IRS, how would the government garner some taxes in order to operate?
Well, first of all, the Constitution was ratified in 1789, and the IRS did not come into existence until 1913, which means the United States had over 100 years with no IRS, no income tax, and the American government had more money than it knew what to do with. The IRS only comprises a percentage of the money that government brings in, and even if we were to eliminate the IRS overnight, the U.S. government would still have plenty of money coming in. The most important thing is that we reduce the size of the federal government to its constitutional limits. Today, the Democrats and Republicans spend $700 billion more than they budget. That's over a half a trillion dollars. And if they're spending that much over budget, I'm not sure why they bother to write a budget at all. I mean, this is not a small percentage, overdraft. I mean, this is a significant amount of money that was unplanned for.
Our health care system is currently in crisis with costs rapidly rising, and 43 million Americans are uninsured today. Is there a way to provide more affordable and accessible health care to all Americans?
Absolutely. And the answer is to remove the government from health care. The Food and Drug Administration has a 10-year testing process for every drug that goes to market. And that testing process costs over $1 billion that consumers have to pay in higher drug costs. Not only that, the FDA only provides a sense of security. There are still thousands of people who die in that 10-year period because they're unable to get the drugs. In addition, the government, it has some regulatory control over health insurance companies, helping to determine which services or treatments are paid for by insurance and which are not. And doctors themselves have a hand to play in higher drug costs or higher medical costs. My mother went to the hospital for a blood test, and although she didn't have to pay for the drug, the blood test herself, the doctor charged the insurance company $600 for a blood test that my mother could have gotten for $25 at the local drugstore. Well, even though my mother didn't pay for the blood test directly, if everyone is doing that, certainly the insurance premiums would go up. So libertarians understand that anytime you want to increase the quality of the service and decrease the cost of that service, you need to privatize it. And the faster we get the government out of health care, the sooner everyone will be able to afford quality, reasonable health care.
Many Americans are purchasing their prescription drugs in Canada these days, as well as other foreign countries. Shouldn't Americans be able to purchase affordable prescription drugs right here in the USA?
Absolutely, and this is a widely known phenomenon, and it is evidence that our medical industry and our pharmaceutical companies are not interested in our health, but they are interested in profits. Our medical or pharmaceutical companies will sell drugs at really high prices in the United States, and then sell those same drugs in Canada for dramatically reduced prices, perhaps 10% of what they cost in the United States. When Americans try to access those drugs over the Internet, our government tells us that we're not allowed to buy those drugs from Canada because they're unsafe. Well, if those drugs are unsafe, why did we sell them to Canada in the first place? I think everyone is aware of this problem, and again, I believe that it is indicative of the problems caused by government control.
Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan has warned that our Social Security system needs to be changed. Others claim it is an enormously successful and solvent program that is being raided by politicians. Who is correct?
I think that Alan Greenspan is being candid when he says that Social Security is not going to be able to survive. We have to continue to raise the age of eligibility and dramatically reduce the benefits. And if we continue without modifying our plans for Social Security, people who are getting out of college now will have to live to 120 years old, and the only benefit that they'll get is a cell phone. The Social Security problem has failed. It is the equivalent of the Titanic with the propellers up in the air. You don't have to be a Navy admiral to know that it's failed. What we need to do is to take care of our elderly, and we can do that by selling off federal land that the federal government shouldn't own in the first place. But we also have to allow our younger people to opt out of Social Security, because it would be terribly immoral for us to require them to pay, you know, large percentages into Social Security, knowing full well that there will be no benefits for them when they're ready to retire. The problem is not insolvable. We merely need to follow the example that the country of Chile gave us when they offered an additional privatized retirement system, and within 2 years, 98% of the people in Chile transferred from the government system to the privatized system.
But what about this charge that we hear all the time about politicians raiding the Social Security Fund and using those funds for other programs?
Well, I believe that is true. I believe that's an additional reason that Social Security has failed. And I think that if we treated the U.S. government the way that we treated Exxon, that there would be many people in Congress, being indicted. Government has misused their authority and abused the Social Security funds that people have been paying into with good faith that they were going to have some benefits as they, reach their later years. And I think that if Social Security were such a wonderful system, then our members of Congress would be on it. But instead, members of Congress have a special fund that gives them, 100% of their pay after sometimes only 4 years of participation in Congress.
Well, that may be true, but if Congress is doing that, they make quite a bit more money than the average American, and they vote on their own raises, and they continually give themselves raises when the economy is not doing that well.
Well,
so, there's quite a differential there between their income and the average income of most Americans.
Well, I fully agree. And, I think that more and more people should be conscious of this fact. And I think that if the American voter realized that Congress was voting itself a raise and establishing this, golden parachute system for their retirement, that, fewer and fewer people would vote for, the current members of Congress. If you're voting the Democrats or the Republicans, they're going to continue and persist in this system. It is only the Libertarian candidates that recognize that that the Constitution puts a limitation on congressional power.
Michael Babnick, this is Jay Kornick again, just interrupting here. Not officially, I actually had a follow-up question on that. What about the idea in terms of Social Security that it's an important safety net in our society? One of the other answers that Susan didn't mention, and I know President Bush had just mentioned, is the idea of a personal retirement account where you could opt out of the national system if it was ever put in place by the Republicans or anyone, and decide on the future investments of those funds yourself. But some people may not be well enough educated or informed in order to make good decisions about their retirement.
Well,
what do you think?
The Libertarian platform is based on individual rights and personal responsibility. You own your own body. You are responsible for putting food in your mouth. You are responsible for putting a shelter over your head. And following that logic, you are also responsible for saving for your own retirement. There's a childhood nursery rhyme about a grasshopper and the ants and their different strategies for providing for the future. And I think that lesson is to be adhered here. You have the responsibility of funding your own retirement. And when our parents and grandparents gave that responsibility to the government, I think that was, you know, in general a bad decision, because the government rarely does anything well. And to allow the government to control your retirement and, you know, do so ineffectively is basically a bad life decision. Furthermore, libertarians believe that welfare is theft. Anytime you take someone else's money for your benefit, that is theft. And if you have the government take someone else's money for you, that's government-authorized theft. And libertarians are strongly opposed to both types. Libertarians in particular, and Americans in general, are the most generous culture on the face of the earth. And I point to the $5 billion that Americans voluntarily contributed to New York City within a month of the September 11th tragedy. Americans will never allow our elderly or disadvantaged to starve to death. However, it is immoral for the government to take property from people who have it and give it to those people that it deems need it. That's basically a redistribution of wealth that is a socialist philosophy, which is completely incompatible with our Constitution and our American way of life.
Thank you for that, that rather complete background. These are all complex issues, and it's difficult even in our one-hour program time to be able to adequately get at some of these things. But for those who are just tuning in or would like to find out who they're talking to, we do like to mention every couple of minutes. You are listening to an interview here at WHFR-FM with presidential candidate of the Libertarian Party, Michael Bednarik, who will be on the Michigan ballot this November along with the other candidates, most of whom you are aware of, but there are several candidates there who are, you know, not John Kerry and not President Bush, and therefore this program and format is devoted to some one of the people that is certainly another totally valid choice for President of the United States. And thank you again for being available by phone to us. I'm going to turn it back to Susan Morrell for more questions.
I also want to mention something that has been proposed for Social Security funds. I know we were talking about Social Security and personal accounts and people investing themselves in the stock market, but isn't it very risky advising people to invest their savings in the stock market, considering the recent stock market bubble and technology bubble that we just went through, when so much value of funds was lost on the stock market and in terms of funds of people's pensions, etc.?
Well, that's precisely the point. Neither the Libertarian Party nor the government should be advising people what to do with their money. And while I recognize that the stock market is very volatile, that is due to the fact that we do not have a stable currency in this country. Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution explicitly states that the states shall not use anything but gold and silver coin as tender in payment of debt. And the reason for that is that, you know, an ounce of gold will always be an ounce of gold and will retain its value. The purpose of that over the history of cultures is to prevent inflation, you know, to prevent people from, you know, creating wealth out of thin air. If, you know, a number of people get together in a garage and they generate $20 bills on their laser printer, they are quickly arrested for counterfeiting. However, we have legalized that process by allowing the Federal Reserve Bank to print money out of thin air. And that causes inflation, and it makes the possibility of predicting your future and investing in the future far more difficult, and the, you know, stock market becomes far more volatile than it needs to be. So one of the things that we would do would be to reestablish a stable currency based on some commodity, probably gold and silver again, and that would allow people to make investments that they can trust, because they know that the value that they are investing in will continue. And again, the government should not be advising people on how to invest their money. Each person, you know, should be allowed to make that decision based on their personal circumstances. A man and woman who have children would probably want to invest in something a little bit more secure, whereas someone who is single and has no children may want to invest in higher risk ventures to make the potential of making more money.
Well, since we've come to that topic about money, let's talk a little bit about the federal deficit, which is growing at an alarming rate. And I'd like to know, do you think most Americans understand the reasons that the deficit is growing so rapidly and is out of control, and how can this deficit be turned back into a surplus?
Well, to answer the first question, no, I do not believe that Americans understand, and I'm not sure which founding father it was, but basically said the problems that we have will not be from the Constitution or because of corruption in government, but it will be specifically because of the people's ignorance about money and how, their economy, flows. And again, one of the problems is that our Congress has a $700 billion deficit. They spend $700 billion, or more than $500 billion, more than they budget. And I'm not sure why they write a budget at all. I mean, if you're going to miss the mark by that much money, I think that you're not really trying. Every adolescent who leaves home and gets their first apartment learns one lesson fairly soon, and that lesson is that you can't spend more money than you bring in. And if we can teach that lesson to our young people, I think it's about time that we taught that lesson to Congress. And as a libertarian president, I would veto any budget that wasn't balanced. I mean, Congress would learn very, very quickly that they would be wasting their time.
Michael, do you think we need an amendment, perhaps, for a balanced budget? Many states and even municipalities, school districts, have that legal pressure on them.
No, I don't believe that we need an amendment. I think that it's intrinsic. It has been suggested to me that we pass an amendment that explicitly says that Congress must follow the Constitution. I think that's ludicrous. The Constitution implies
yes.
that Congress must follow the Constitution. And, to say that we have to write an amendment to establish a balanced budget is just as ludicrous. I mean, it's kind of an implicit thing. And I think that we, the people, need to take better control over our government. We, the people, are the ones who elect the members of Congress. And, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And if someone, plans to vote for the Republicans or plans to vote for the Democrats and they expect anything to change in Washington, they're crazy. The only way that we are going to get government under control, the only way that we are going to reduce taxes, bring our sons and daughters home from, 135 countries around the world, and to eliminate unconstitutional laws such as the Patriot Act, is to do something different. And I recommend that if people really want their rights protected, they really want candidates in office who respect the Constitution and will abide by their oath of office, that they vote for every libertarian on the ballot.
Well, since we do have this deficit right now, if you became president, what would you do to reduce that deficit and turn that back into a surplus? We did have a surplus a few years ago.
Well, one of the things that makes me qualified is to recognize that I don't know all the answers, but I am smart enough to find people who can advise me and can help me solve these problems. If I get elected, one of my promises is to appoint Bernard von Nothaus as my Secretary of the Treasury, and he is a person who has actually established a private currency based 100% on silver. People can find out more by going to libertydollar.org. And Bernard von Nothaus understands the economy much better than I do. He explains that we need to get back to a stable currency based on, gold and silver, that we need to gradually reduce the national debt. He explains that it would be a difficult process. For a while, people would feel a little bit of pressure on the economy. But the sooner we do it, the less painful it's going to be. if we allow the government to continue expanding at its incredible rate and to continue to create this this multi-trillion dollar deficit, the longer we wait, the more difficult it's going to be to fix it.
The concept of an ownership society has been proposed during this presidential campaign. Is this a concept that would work for most Americans?
Well, I hope that it would work for most Americans because it is precisely the idea upon which our government is based. The Declaration of Independence says that we have the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What few people realize is that the phrase pursuit of happiness was edited in, and it replaced the word property, life, liberty, and property. And that phrase was then reintroduced in the Fifth Amendment, which says that we cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And so property is probably the one-word answer for any constitutional question. All of your rights derive from property, and the purpose of the Constitution and the government that is formed by it is to protect your life, your liberty, and your property, which means that when governments come in and exercise eminent domain to take your property away and give it to another private organization, they are blatantly violating the Constitution. So it pleases me that other candidates are starting to talk about property and ownership, because this has long been a libertarian tenet. And for libertarians, it pleases us to realize that we are a significant force in politics because other parties are starting to adopt our policies.
When you talk about the Constitution and the idea of property being the most important idea in the Constitution, what about the role of the citizen or personhood? How does that fit into the Constitution?
Well, everyone owns his or her own body. That is a concept that we take for granted today. However, even in our own country, that was not always true. The Declaration of Independence said that all men are created equal. Unfortunately, in 1776, that was precisely what they meant. Women were not allowed to vote. Women were not allowed to own property. And most embarrassingly, black people were considered property. After 200 years of enlightenment, we've come to realize that gender and race are inappropriate distinctions for who does or does not have individual rights. And so we now hold that everyone owns his or her own property. And they, again, the idea of private property is directly related to many of our rights. I have a right to walk back and forth across my property. However, it is a privilege to walk back and forth across your property, a privilege that you can deny me at any time in the future.
Do you consider the war on drugs an effective policy?
No, certainly not. And I don't know anyone in the United States who does. The war on drugs has been a dismal failure. We have far more drugs in the United States today than we did before we started the war on drugs, and the war on drugs is a bigger threat to our civil liberties than the drugs themselves. For example, police agents can, you know, come and search your home based on an anonymous tip that violates your privacy. Police agents can discover a marijuana cigarette under the seat of your car, confiscate the car, sell the car at 10 cents on the dollar, and then keep the money. And this creates a very strong motivation for them to find or position more marijuana cigarettes under more car seats. And it's estimated that 50% of our agencies designed to deal with drugs are actually assisting in the sale of drugs.
Doesn't the IRS, Mr. Bednarik, also have a search and seizure rights, too, that are almost beyond...
Well, again, the war on drugs has created they have started to use something known as asset forfeiture, where any time you are, even implicated in a conviction, they can come and, take all of your property. And yes, the IRS is well known for confiscating people's property during the procedure and even, you know, before they have had due process of law.
Let me just interrupt and tell our listeners that this is the new WHFR Journal, a pre-recorded show done on September 12th, 2004. We're speaking with Michael Bednarik, who is the candidate for President of the United States on the Libertarian Party ticket. And again, thank you for being with us today. And back to Susan Morrell, our news director, for the next question.
I would like you to continue on your discussion of personal property and this war on drugs and how the government agents are confiscating personal property from individuals.
It is a little known fact because most people in the United States do not take drugs. I mean, I would say a very high percentage of people do not take drugs. I've never smoked a marijuana cigarette in my life. I've never even smoked a tobacco cigarette in my life. However, I recognize that, you know, you own your own body. You decide what food you eat. You decide whether or not you're going to drink alcohol or smoke cigarettes. And you should be the person who decides, possibly with the help of your doctor, which medication you take, either to, you know, cure a particular illness or even to just pursue happiness if people want to smoke marijuana. The idea of having a victimless crime is antithetical to the Constitution. If there's no victim, by definition, there's no crime. And in the United States, we literally have more people in prison than they do in communist China. And most of the people in American prisons are there due to drug-related charges. Americans, libertarians are often labeled as those, you know, crazy wackos that want their children to do drugs. And this is a ludicrous position. Libertarians love their children at least as much as the Democrats and Republicans. We just recognize that the war on drugs has failed. There are much better ways to keep drugs away from our children. In fact, Charles Manson is in prison. He's also in solitary confinement. And Charles Manson still finds ways to buy and sell drugs in prison. So if we're unable to keep drugs out of our prisons where we've got, you know, security guards and 24-hour cameras, I mean, it's ludicrous to think that we would be able to keep them, you know, off of our city streets. I'd also like to point out that any time the government creates a war on something, the problem becomes worse. The government created a war on poverty, and we have more homeless people, more people pushing grocery carts today than we did when we started. The government created a war on drugs, and we have far more drugs on the streets today than we did 50 years ago. And I want to caution people that our government has recently declared a war on terror. Given the government's track record, do we think that we're going to have more terror or less terror at the end of this war?
Getting back, we'll get to that in a minute, but I'd like to get back to this question of the war on drugs and what about all the costs that are involved in enforcing this war on drugs and the costs of incarceration and, you know, what happens to people when they come out of prison? Can they go back into society and live a life of a meaningful life and a life of contribution towards society?
Well, I personally believe that we are spending far too much money to fight this war on drugs. Too many police officers, too much money is being spent on it to protect us from something that is not really that big of a threat. Furthermore, people are thrown in jail. Their lives are destroyed. They spend, you know, several years in prison. And with some of the mandatory sentencing laws, we have people in, you know, spending, you know, 25 years to life in jail for possessing, you know, drugs and marijuana that the government disapproves of, whereas people who have committed murder are getting out, you know, after 10 or 12 years with good behavior. And I think that any rational person would realize that this is a, you know, that the respective punishments for these crimes are disproportionate.
Should marijuana be legalized?
The Libertarian platform says that all drugs should be decriminalized. We don't like the word legalized because it tends to imply that libertarians are in favor of drugs. And we do not endorse, we do not propose that people go out and take drugs. but we do believe that they should be decriminalized. Not only would it eliminate all of the millions and possibly billions of dollars being spent or wasted to prosecute the war on drugs, which is a never-ending battle, and it would also allow us to reduce the problem. Currently, you know, people are unwilling to go into the hospital to seek treatment. If they're addicted to drugs, they're terrified that they will be arrested as soon as they go in for treatment. If we were to decriminalize drugs, you know, and make treatments available, people on the streets who are currently addicted would be far more likely to come in for treatment and to get, you know, off of drugs. I mean, because it is possible to, you know, to get people off of the substance abuse that they have. But, you know, we need to have them willing to come in and seek that treatment. And our libertarians recognize that decriminalization would do that. Now, there is a fear among some people that if we were to decriminalize all the drugs, that there would be people running naked through the streets, we would have, you know, widespread mayhem, and that society would, you know, basically come to an end. And I patently disagree with this. There is a product that is probably known worldwide, and that product is Coca-Cola. And Coca-Cola has its name because it was originally laced with cocaine. It was a cocaine beverage. And there is no historical evidence that, you know, people were coming unglued and doing anything, you know, strange or unusual just because they happened to be, you know, drinking Coca-Cola. So I reject the idea that decriminalization of drugs is going to be causing, you know, widespread mayhem.
Is everyone in the United States currently paying his or her fair share of taxes?
Well, I think the correct question is to know, you know, what is a fair share and what law makes us liable for these taxes. There are several groups within the United States that have posed questions to the IRS and to the Department of Justice, and you know, those two agencies have patently refused to answer. Their response is typically that those are frivolous arguments, and, you know, they just insist that people fill out their 1040 forms and send in most of their income. And I think I may have said earlier that the Constitution was ratified in 1789. The IRS did not come into existence until 1913. So we had more than 100 years with no IRS, no income tax, and the American government had more money than it knew what to do with. We do not need the IRS, and I think that if all the people in the United States who hate the IRS were to vote for me this November, I could win the election.
Former presidential candidate Pat Buchanan states that free trade and outsourcing are economic treason against the American worker. Is he correct?
I wouldn't say that it is treason. Every person has the right to do business, and it would be immoral for me to force you to purchase a product at a higher price, you know, somewhere else. I mean, the law of supply and demand indicates that the consumer will set the prices for goods because of their willingness to pay them. And what libertarians believe in is a free market. We want to remove all the government obstacles that make the cost of doing business in the United States excessively high and cut into the profit margins for most companies. And so, as a libertarian, I would never pass a law that would prevent countries from, you know, doing business or moving manufacturing offshore. However, by removing all the government regulations in the United States and getting rid of NAFTA and GATT, I believe that we can make an economic climate here in the United States that would be very, very, you know, beneficial to companies, and they would no longer be motivated to move their jobs and manufacturing offshore.
Why do you think 9/11 happened?
I think that September 11th happened is because we are not paying attention to history. The American military has been involved in the Middle East for over 50 years, and we have been influencing other countries, you know, other governments, other economies, and politically poking other countries in the eye with a sharp stick. I think that it was really just a matter of time before people found some way to retaliate against what they feel is a repressive imposition by the American military. Over 50% of the people in the United States feel that entering into Iraq was a mistake. I believe that it is a continuation of that mistake to stay in Iraq, and I think that President Bush admitted as much during his acceptance speech at the Republican National Convention, indicating that we cannot win that war. So I think the only solution is to bring our sons and daughters home as safely and quickly as possible.
More than $41 billion has been spent on homeland security. Yet the United States still has a significant problem with illegal immigration. Was this money well spent, and how can we better secure our borders?
Well, homeland security really kind of addresses a different issue, I think, trying to keep us safe from terrorism. I don't think that they're doing a very good job of that. My girlfriend is a flight attendant for a major airline, and occasionally they have sky marshals that come aboard, and they have to be introduced to the flight attendants so they know where they're sitting and you know, who they are. One of the sky marshals announced that he had just gone through security. The security people allowed him to keep his 357, but had deprived him of his nail clippers. I mean, this doesn't border on insanity. It has long since crossed over. So I am not very confident of a government that can't make rational decisions to protect me in the air. The immigration problem is slightly different. We have a lot of people in the United States who are working and doing jobs that most Americans do not care to have, and they are doing them for wages that are far below what Americans would normally accept. We need to stop being hypocritical and admit to ourselves that, especially in the border states like New Mexico and Arizona, that the economy would collapse or would be negatively impacted even if we could find all these people and move them back to Mexico. Much of the reason that many of these people are considered illegal is because they found it difficult or impossible to circumvent the mountain of paperwork that is required to come into this country. I think the solution is to reduce the mountain of paperwork, to make it possible for people to come in and register so that we know where they are and allow them to continue doing the jobs that we count on. But there is yet another faction of this that people in the southern border states are very aware of, that you have bands of drug dealers. You have groups of people bringing, I think they're called coyotes, that traffic in human people coming across. And I'm also told that factions of the Mexican military come across our border. And these groups damage property. They are accused of committing murders and other crimes. And, you know, we need to be able to, you know, address these crimes and have enough of a police force or a border control to reduce those type of crimes and address them. So I think the last thing that I would do would be to eliminate our socialist welfare state. Many of these people are coming here because they get free education, free housing, free health care, and I don't want to pay for someone else's free benefits, regardless of what their ethnic background is. So we need to eliminate welfare, reduce rather than increase the requirements of the border so people can come in to work and do jobs that help our economy. And we need to focus on the criminals who cross our border and commit crimes.
Of the United States. And Michael, you've been holding up pretty well over the last 45 minutes of grueling of questions here.
Well, thank you.
By Susan Morrell. And remember, she's only a volunteer. We're all volunteers here. I get a little bit of money on the side, but...
Well, I'm a volunteer, too.
Yes.
I have volunteered to dedicate the last 2 years of my life and my fortune to this sacred honor of fighting for liberty. And I'm hoping to restore constitutional limitations on government.
We're going to take you into probably one of the biggest question areas now, and that is, and I'll just introduce it and you can go with it however, and that is the war on terror that you started linking to the war on drugs and the war on poverty as being failed policies, and also the war in Iraq. So jump in there.
Well, again, I think that statistics show that well over 50% of the people in the United States recognize that the war in Iraq was a mistake. I think that it's a, you know, compounds our mistake to stay there. 92% of the people in Iraq consider us occupiers rather than liberators. And, you know, we cannot, our public strategy apparently to win the hearts and minds of the people of Iraq is to bomb their buildings and kill innocent civilians. I don't think that this is going to improve relations between our companies, our countries. And when, you know, even if we kill, you know, five or more terrorists when we bomb a building, I think that 50 more people are motivated to become terrorists. So I think that our prosecution of this war tends to make the United States, puts us in more danger rather than make us safer. As an analogy, imagine that you have a hornet's nest on your property. If that is true, you always have a small but finite chance of being stung by a hornet. Now imagine taking a baseball bat and going down there to beat on this hornet's nest in an effort to, you know, kill. And while you may kill, you know, five or six hornets, I think that your chances of being stung dramatically increase. And I think that George Bush admitted during his acceptance speech at the convention that we cannot win this war in Iraq and the war on terror. And I think that Americans need to admit that. And I think that it's time for us to bring our sons and daughters home as safely and quickly as possible.
What changes would you make to our military policy in addition to bringing the troops home?
Well, libertarians would like to follow the advice that George Washington gave us during his farewell address. George Washington indicated that Americans should maintain economic ties with all countries and entangling alliances with none. What that means is that we would put an end to our abusive tariff structure where one country has to pay 100% or more and another favored country only pays 5% of the same products. This is, you know, blatantly biased. What we would do would be to establish kind of a flat tariff for all countries. We would sell our goods to, you know, all countries, and that would improve our economy, raise the standard of living of other countries, and dramatically reduce their, you know, probability that they'll bite the hand that feeds them. Furthermore, we have American military in 135 countries around the world. We are using our military to influence other governments, to influence other economies, and we are politically poking these countries in the eye with a sharp stick. It's very little wonder that other countries are dissatisfied with our foreign policy. If we want other countries to be a good neighbor, we have to set an example and be a good neighbor ourselves.
Would you support a draft?
Absolutely not. A draft is basically immoral and unconstitutional. The 13th Amendment prohibits involuntary servitude. And as libertarians, we believe in voluntary interaction in everything. We would never force our young people to go and fight and potentially die in foreign countries. Members of the military that I've spoken to themselves do not want a draft because they say they do not want to be in combat next to someone who was forced to be there, someone who did not volunteer. I personally think that if we are having difficulty getting people to volunteer for the military, I think that is a social indication that average Americans do not support the military engagements that America finds itself in these days.
The Patriot Act was created to protect us from terrorism. Do you think it protects our civil liberties?
Oh, it does not. The Patriot Act is the most egregiously unconstitutional piece of paper ever to leave Congress since the Alien and Sedition Act. It blatantly violates the Fourth Amendment, which protects your right to privacy and requires that government agents have a warrant supported by oath or affirmation before they search the premises. According to the Patriot Act, the government can search your home, and they're not required to give you a warrant until 90 days after the fact. And I don't trust the government to give us that warrant even 90 days later if we haven't complained in the first 3 months. Furthermore, the Sixth Amendment protects your right to the assistance of counsel for your defense. The Patriot Act blatantly ignores that by allowing the government to label you a terrorist throw you in jail without an indictment for an indefinite amount of time with no phone call and no lawyer. In the United States, you are supposedly innocent until proven guilty. If that is true, it is impossible for you to be a terrorist until after the trial. And I think that because 317 cities and four states have actively made proposals indicating that the Patriot Act is unconstitutional and is null and void in their respective jurisdictions, that this is an indication that even common average Americans understand the dangers of the Patriot Act, and I would put an end to the Patriot Act as soon as I was took the inaugural oath of office.
Okay. Michael Badnarik, the presidential candidate from the Libertarian Party. Jay Kornick with you here, along with Susan Morrell and W. Witchfire Studios. We only have about, only about 9 minutes to go. We want to give you time to do sort of a summary statement, too, for us. But I was taking notes along the way here, and so here's a couple more for you. Maybe a difficult one. You talked earlier about the libertarian belief in the free market. Yeah, I wanted to ask you if you thought there was any appropriate restrictions and regulations that the government might have over business. I'm referring to, and maybe you're aware of, the book by Clyde Cleveland, who is a libertarian candidate for governor of Oklahoma? Iowa. Yeah, and he felt in particular that companies that were major polluters of our environment should be held accountable by a federal government, even under a libertarian regime. How do you feel on that?
Well, I agree that anyone who does pollution needs to be held accountable, and I would not limit that to large companies and corporations. I would also include the U.S. government, which actually generates more chemical pollution than the top five chemical companies combined. Unfortunately, the United States government uses something known as sovereign immunity to hold themselves absolved from that responsibility. They claim basically that, you know, they are the government, they are only, you know, doing their job, and they are trying to do, you know, things in our best interest. Therefore, you know, we as ordinary Americans are, you know, denied the opportunity to file lawsuits against the government. Well, first of all, that is unconstitutional. The First Amendment explicitly says that we can petition the government for a redress of grievances. In English, that means that we can file a lawsuit against the government and win. We, the people, are sovereign and not the government. So, in general, libertarian philosophy is that you will have, you know, individual rights and personal responsibility. And for companies that, you know, take the liberty of, you know, discharging, you know, polluting elements, that they must be responsible. And what we would like to do in the United States is to make it possible and, you know, likely that people can file lawsuits against companies that pollute and make it far, far more expensive for companies to clean up the pollution than it might have been for them to prevent the pollution in the first place. England is a perfect example where people, you know, own the fishing rights. They can file lawsuits against polluters upstream, and England is reported to have the cleanest air and water in the world.
There is a documentary, a feature film that's been making the rounds here in Michigan, sort of the college circuit at least, called The Corporation. I think it's based on a book that came out a year or so ago that talks about the fact that in the United States we have legal protection for corporations as individuals. How do you stand on that issue? Does that cause undue problems? Apparently we're one of the few countries in the world that sees a corporation protected as an individual.
It does cause problems. I reject the idea out of hand, and I mean, it basically violates the definitions that we use. Individuals have rights. Corporations do not. A corporation is an artificial entity. Corporation does not have freedom of speech, not have freedom of religion, does not have the right to keep and bear arms because it is artificial. It is a juristic person created abstractly for the purpose of contract and you know, potentially going to court. We can file a lawsuit against Firestone Tires on the assumption that they have made, you know, a faulty product, for example. The idea in the 14th Amendment that it raises corporations, artificial entities, to the level of individuals imbued with the same individual rights as human beings is nonsense. And I summarily reject it. And the idea itself causes great problems when you're in the legal system.
Okay, my final question to you, and it's a little bit of a negative issue, but you may have run across it many times in other interviews. Are you a spoiler candidate, being not a Democrat or Republican?
Well, I reject the idea, and the tone of the question. Usually it is asked in the respect that, am I going to be stealing votes from either George Bush or John Kerry? Well, to ask if I'm stealing votes implies that George Bush or John Kerry own those votes. They have some vested right to those votes even before the election, and that is patently untrue. The voter, you know, the people in America, have the right to one vote. They can and should cast their ballot for the person they think will best represent them in Washington in the next 4 years. And, you know, if I acquire votes, that means that I have been winning votes for liberty. If George Bush and John Kerry find themselves with fewer votes than they anticipated, it is clearly because they did not earn those votes. I would also like to address the wasted vote response. The only wasted vote is when you cast your ballot for a candidate you do not respect.
Mm-hmm.
I suggest that, you know, if you vote for the lesser of two evils and your candidate wins, you still get evil. You know, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results is insanity.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't like the way that Washington is working, if you think that Washington is going to raise your taxes, pass unconstitutional laws, and continue to send our sons and daughters into foreign involvements that you don't think we should be in, then stop voting for the Democrats and Republicans. You need to vote your conscience. You need to express to Washington what your true values are. And I think the best way to do that is to vote for every libertarian on the ballot.
I wanted to also add, yes, certainly I didn't ask that question with any sort of negative tone toward you, but it always comes up, you know. And
I understand.
Yeah.
And I don't take umbrage at it, but it is just a general assumption that people have. The only question that I have resented during the time that I've been the nominee is when people start by saying, you can't win, therefore, who is your preference? And my answer to that is, first of all, I can win. I am already on the ballot in 43 states. I already have a mathematical possibility of, you know, winning the White House, something that Ralph Nader cannot claim because he's not on the ballot in enough states. And again, if, you know, everybody in the United States who hates the IRS and would like to see that agency eliminated, if they voted for me, I would win by a landslide. So I can win.
Plus, the Libertarian philosophy and Libertarian Party, if I'm not mistaken, you have more candidates on the ballot at every level going into the national election, that is local, state, and national level, than any party other than the Democrats or Republicans. So there is a way to vote for the Libertarian Party at every level.
That is true. Mm-hmm. And in Texas, we actually have more candidates on the ballot for Congress than the Republicans. There are 32 districts in Texas. We have 31 candidates on the ballot for Congress. The only district that we chose not to run a candidate is in Ron Paul's district, out of deference for the one man who recognizes the Constitution and always votes against a bill that is unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
But the question as to who would I vote for, Bush or Kerry, is ludicrous. If I thought that I could vote for George Bush or John Kerry and respect myself in the morning, I would still be in Austin, Texas, you know, living my life.
We only have, and I promised a few more minutes, we only have a minute or so at the end of our show here. Did you want to make any final point? I think the last few minutes you've made some very good points about people considering their votes as important and to consider all the candidates and to vote their conscience as to who's the best candidate. Any final thought in the last, say, 60 seconds that I can give you?
I would like people to visit our website at lp.org. That's for the Libertarian Party. They can visit my website at badnarik.org. That's badnarik.org. They can also call our office in Austin, Texas. The number is 800 800-807-7552. The number again is 800-807-7552. And I would like to ask your listeners to help me get into the presidential debate. I'm a legitimate candidate from a legitimate party, and I have a right to have my message heard. But more importantly, American voters have a right to hear all of the sides of the issue before they go to the polls in November.
I completely agree. I hope we can get a fuller debate and have all the valid and legal candidates for office to be able to speak out and to have people hear them. Thank you very much for spending your time with us for the last hour. I will also repeat right now, we've been speaking for the last hour to Michael Badnarik, who is the candidate of the Libertarian Party for President of the United States. And again, the website for Libertarian Party, easy one to remember, www.lp.org. Michael Badnarik, his campaign website, badnarik.org. By the way, it's interesting, it's isn't it carryandbush.com? I mean, their two websites are commercial. good choice for .org. And again, the campaign phone number, 800-807-7552. Thank you so much for being with us on the new WHFR Journal, Michael Badnarik.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time to get our message out.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susan.
And that's all for today. The WHFR Journal concludes with our usual theme, just stay involved and let's keep stirring things up.
Dick Alfonsi with you here at WHFR Dearborn, and I'll be playing big band music until 2 o'clock. If you have a song or artist you'd like to hear from, give me a call at 313-845-9676 or 1-800-585-HFCC, extension 9676.
These are the blues.